Last night I tried to give you some feeling for this extraordinary woman, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, by bringing her up close to you in her humanity. We think of saints somehow as other than ourselves, people who are different. They really aren't. They were human beings just like us, with all the thoughts and feelings and reactions that we experience. Thérèse was especially human, if you can say that of anybody. Maybe it's because we know so much about her that we find it so. There is so much material about her. It's incredible. Photographs, letters that she sent and received, letters in which other people mention her, countless recorded recollections of those who knew her. On Thérèse we have, as we say, an embarrassment of riches. It is amazing that all this material was preserved. Her family, both her own and her cousins, the Guérin family, were the greatest letter keepers that you will ever run into. There are hundreds and hundreds of letters. Of course, not all the letters were kept. And being spoiled by the great many that we do have, we feel the loss of those we don't. For example, she wrote over 100 letters to Father Pichon, the Jesuit who was her spiritual confidant and who had gone out as a missionary to Canada. Apparently, he destroyed her letters. It's natural enough. You throw letters away after you've read them. But it makes me groan every time I think of it, because her whole soul was in those letters. I keep hoping that they'll turn up in some Canadian attic. What a find they would be. In any case, we are fortunate to know so much of the humanity of Thérèse, and this is providential. God wanted this to be so. Her sensitivity and shyness, and at the same time her outgoing love of fun, the pain she carried inside, but the radiant smile she could always manage, a smile of genuine joy that kept people from ever guessing the pain inside, the fears she faced, but the courage with which she faced them. Someone has defined courage as fear that has said its prayers. Her good looks. That's nice to know. Take a look at that photo over there in the shrine when you get a chance. I have a yet far more beautiful photo in my room, front view, with her looking directly into the camera. Veil and all, she's gorgeous. As a child, she was ravishing. One man in Lisieux recalled after her canonization how often in the early morning on his way to work he would pass young Thérèse walking with her father on the way to daily mass. He would greet the two amiably, and when they had passed by, he would invariably turn to look after them, admiring that pretty little girl. Another gentleman recalled often sitting behind her in church at Sunday mass and being absolutely distracted by the lovely golden curls that cascaded down her shoulders. Thérèse could have married any man in France that she wanted. But from the beginning, there was no man she wanted to marry except Jesus Christ. It was to him and to him alone that she would give herself. This love for Jesus did not interfere with her love of life. She loved nature and could sit lost in wonder at a sunset. The family used to go to the seashore at Trouville or Deauville, where, incidentally, I told you they were people of means, they would rent a whole villa for a month or 6 weeks. There is a charming description in the autobiography of herself and Céline sitting on a rock one evening watching the sun go down. She wrote extremely well. The description is a fine piece of writing. And you can just see that path of sunlight shimmering on the water. She adored flowers. As a child, she kept all kinds of pets, birds and kittens, rabbits. In those days, they didn't have those, what do you call them? I forget. Those funny little things. I forget. Gerbils. Or is it Goebbels? Her dog's name was Tom. Now, isn't that strange that in a French family they would call the dog Tom? Almost as though we would call our dog Pierre. And she loved Tom so much that it fairly broke her heart to leave him when she entered the cloister. She put her arms around him and she hugged him and she nearly cried. She had a pretty blue hat that she was very attached to. She was in so many ways just like you and me. Well, last evening we got up to her 14th year. Let's get on with the story. Her 15th was a big year. From her very early childhood, she had wanted to follow her older sisters, Marie and Pauline, into the Carmelite cloister in her hometown of Lisieux. She had set her heart on doing so by Christmas of 1887. Now prepare yourself for the shock of this. On Christmas of 1887, she was still 1 week away from her 15th birthday. That is awfully young to enter the cloister. Rarely in the history of the Carmelite order had anyone ever been allowed to enter at that age, and today she would not stand a chance. Think whatever you will of it. This girl, this shy and sensitive girl, was determined to meet the deadline. She had her family's backing, but that was all. Her uncle, that's her deceased mother's brother, Isidore Guérin, who was very influential in the family councils, was strongly opposed to it. The priest who was the superior of the Carmel, was almost bitterly opposed to it. He said, "It's ridiculous. A child entering the cloister." He had the ear of the bishop and of the vicar general of the bishop. So the opposition was formidable. Her father, who supported her in her desire, and he knew her. He knew her extraordinary maturity. Her father went with her to see the bishop of Bayeux, where the diocese was located, but the answer was still no. Thérèse would not give up. It so happened that just at this time, her father was taking Céline and Thérèse with a group of people from Lisieux on a pilgrimage to Rome. Thérèse decided she would bring her case personally to the Pope. Imagine the boldness and the determination of this shy and sensitive young girl. The Pope was Leo XIII, by now an extremely old man. One by one, the pilgrims came up and knelt before his chair to greet him. Thérèse's heart was pounding. Let her tell the story herself. This is from a letter she wrote from Rome on November 20th, 1887, to her sister Pauline in the Carmel. "Monsignor Reveroni," he was the vicar general, "did not give me time to say all I planned to say. He cut me short, saying to the Pope, 'Holy Father, this is a child who wishes to enter Carmel at 15, but the superiors are considering the matter.' The good Pope is so old that one would say he is dead." I would hardly have pictured him like this. He can hardly say anything. I would have liked to be able to explain my business, but there was no way. The Holy Father said simply, "Child, if God wills it, you will enter." Then they made me pass into another room. Oh, Pauline, I cannot tell you what I felt. I was crushed. I am crying a lot as I write this letter. My heart is heavy. You might like to hear Céline's description in her letter home 3 days later. Thérèse was so pretty at the feet of the Holy Father. She was kneeling there, her hands joined on the Pope's knees, and her eyes were so pleading. It was beautiful to see her this way. And then I followed in tears, asking for a blessing for Carmel. So the answer was no. Christmas passed. But through her incredible determination, she finally broke down all opposition and 4 months later entered Carmel to spend the rest of her life, which was less than 10 years. They were 10 extremely happy years. And they were 10 years filled with suffering. I would like to repeat that because I think it's terribly important. They were 10 extremely happy years, and they were 10 years filled with suffering. This is one of the great secrets that she has revealed to us. I doubt that I can communicate this to you properly. It's impossible. You can only learn it by a long, slow, reading of her life and her letters and prayerful reflection upon them. Therese is a great teacher, but we can only learn if we sit at her feet. In the midst of all kinds of suffering, she knew how to keep her joy. She wore a beautiful smile in all her dealings with everybody. And this was not a painted-on smile, a sort of mask that she wore. It was a real smile, genuine and unpretending, coming from her inner depths and radiating out a true joy and the peace that she found in God. Now, this is a lesson that we all need to learn, because there's a lot of suffering in all our lives, whether we are young or old, whether we are single, celibate, or married, and we shall be almost always deprived of happiness if we can only know it when things are running smoothly. Things just don't run smoothly most of the time. Hardly a day passes that we don't have something to put up with. It is not being pessimistic to say that. It is simply a fact. What do we have to put up with, you and I? Mostly little things. Like the nun who splashed water on her, or the one who rattled her beads, or a cutting remark from an uncultivated member of her community, misunderstanding, a patronizing manner on the part of the older sisters because they felt she was just a kid, she was just a child. She could buy and sell any one of them. But she never let on. She was no child. She was a woman. She matured very early. And then there was one big thing, one awful suffering, that she was called to bear and that she named the greatest cross of her life, her father's long illness. It was especially hard because it was a mental illness. He suffered two or three strokes, as a result of which he gradually lost his mind. This intelligent, dignified, handsome man. Therese often speaks of his handsomeness and of his beautiful singing voice. This marvelous father, of whom the girls were all so proud and whom they loved so much, lost his mind. His behavior became bizarre. Céline, who wanted to enter Carmel and selflessly stepped aside to let Therese enter before her, stayed at home with Léonie to take care of him. Eventually, he became unmanageable, and he had to be put away in an asylum in Caen. It was run by sisters and was called Bon Sauveur, Good Savior Asylum. The sisters were very nice, Celine and Leonie went and took a room in Cayenne, but they were permitted to see him only once a week. I don't know what they did with the rest of the time in a strange town. He had always been fond of traveling. Mr. Martin was a great traveler. Once he went off for 2.5 months by himself on a pleasure trip around mid-Europe and the Near East. And this manifested itself in a strange way now, because he started to wander, and when he could sneak away, somehow he would get out of the institution and he would be lost for several days, and they would be absolutely frantic trying to find him. All this came to Thérèse in letters from Céline, which she read in her little cell with her poor heart bleeding. On top of which, rumors came from the town that people were saying it was that young girl that broke her poor old father's heart, and that's why he lost his mind. She's the one to blame. That was a cross. All right. She bore it for more than 5 years, and she bore it with a smile. Do you see what I'm driving at? She is the greatest saint of modern times, and the things that happened to her were exactly like the things that happened to us. You don't need extraordinary experiences to become a saint. Ordinary ones serve just as well. It's what you do with your experiences that makes you a saint. How you see God in them, whatever they are. Don't you and I go through similar trials? All those miserable, petty annoyances that can really so upset you on the job, at home, with the kids, whatever. And then once in a while, a big cross. Don't we watch our loved ones die? 34 years ago, I watched my mother die slowly from cancer. It was terrible. Months of awful pain as the sickness ate her alive. Her last weeks were hideous. Her pain, unbearable. The drugs wouldn't kill her. My father died of cancer, too. So I suppose will I. Gotta die from something. But thank God he had almost no pain. Poor Mom was dragged out through the barbed wire. Did I have as much to offer God as Thérèse of Lisieux? You bet I did. Or almost as much. So have you. Can we be saints too? Of course we can. The only tragedy is not to be a saint. A great Frenchman named Léon Blois said that. The only tragedy is not to be a saint. We are called to be saints. We are all called to be mystics. Every baptized person is meant to be a mystic. We can be saints. I'm not saying great saints, but little saints. And Therese can show us how. Oh, she was daring in her vision. This greater than Joan of Arc. She saw what she saw, and she knew what she knew. She never faltered in her magnificent faith. She said, there is a whole army of little souls out there, and I want to lead them. I will show them the little way. Listen well to what I'm saying. It's not the easy way. It's the little way. We're fools if we fail to follow it. Because at the end of the way, at the end of the road, is God.